I'd like now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Diana Lewis. She is author of the new play, The Hat, which opens at the Santa Fe Playhouse this Thursday, the 12th of March. And it's Thursdays through Saturdays at 7:30 and Sundays at 2 o'clock this weekend and next weekend. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here.
It's great to have you. I read this play last night. It was absolutely riveting. I loved it. I'm looking forward to seeing it performed. And I'm trying to figure out how to get you to talk about the play without giving the whole play away.
Okay. This is what I will do. I will tell you about the first scene because that's the setup for the play. In the first scene, we see Zilla Arvad, who is an internationally known photographer, and her manager, Simon, arrive at a gallery in Poland sometime in the late 1980s, just outside of Auschwitz.
Now, in your mind, are they Polish or American? Like, I know it's a play and it's all in English, but...
Yeah, Simon is American. Zilla is of mixed background. She was born in Poland, but later in her life lived in Switzerland and finally in Israel. And it's from Israel that she comes to take photographs. Her photographs are of camp survivors. And her whole life has been devoted to that particular period of time because that's when she came to be. She was 3 years old or thereabouts when she was sent off on a train to someplace safer on Kinder transport to Switzerland, where she went to school, and where at war's end, no one came for her. She carries with her to every show she does a photograph of a train station in which she is there in her little coat with a tag fluttering in the breeze, and a woman wearing a big black hat with three white circles is helping her onto a train, and this is her mother. She always shows this photograph because she always hopes that someone will appear and say, "I knew her."
Right.
And in fact, when they get to the gallery, an old woman does appear. And she wants to see that photo because she's seen it in the newspaper. And she wants to see it up close. She does. She leaves suddenly. And when she leaves behind a shopping bag. And in the shopping bag is the hat with the three white circles. And that's how the play begins.
And it goes in all kinds of unexpected directions, which we can't give away, but... It actually reminds me of so many different things, but there was a show at Santa Fe some years ago called The Disappeared, and one of the things that happened in the show was about the military dictatorships in Latin America in the 70s and 80s and that whole period, and there were pictures of parents who lost their lives and whose children were taken from them, and the hope was that the children would see pictures of their parents, somehow recognize them.
Yeah.
And that actually happened.
Yes.
So these things happen, these kind of weird historical unifications happen through photography.
Yes. And this was partly her mission, because she'd grown up without a mother, without a father, and this orphanage, as she came of age, would send children off to Israel. And so she was sent. And that's where she grew up, and that's where she learned to be a photographer. But she spends her life looking for a past she never had.
Now, on the front of the card for your play, The Hat, is a picture of a woman with a big dark hat with three circles on it.
And this, in fact, was the inspiration for the play, because the picture is of my mother. And it was probably taken in 1943, maybe 44. She was always a very natty dresser, and in the photo you can see she's got a lovely coat and she's got a fur muff and so on. Cute little shoes. But in fact, she is wearing one of the ugliest hats I've ever seen. And it has these three big white circles on it, and I wondered what would possess someone who was otherwise quite stylish to wear a hat like that. And so in answer to that question came the play. And I must also say that at the time that I was writing the play, a good friend of mine was Lois Viscoli, and I wanted a part for her. And so I kept that in mind as I was writing it. And so, in fact, there was a part for her.
Ah.
And unfortunately, she died this year.
But you've got somebody else playing that
part.
Yes,
I've got a wonderful woman with a Polish heritage who will be very convincing in the role.
Now, you are of Polish heritage.
Yes.
And so this play is, to some extent, drawing on the history or the feeling of your family during World War II?
In fact, what occurred was that my mother was born in the States. She went back to Poland when she was about 3. When she was 19, because I suppose she was the middle child and yearned for something, she took a trip to the United States and visited with a friend of her mother's. This was in the summer of 1939. In September, Hitler took Poland, and my mother could not return to Poland for 6 years. Not a phone call, not a letter, no connection at all. And so her life changed. She married, and I was born. But in the area of New Jersey that I lived in, there were so many people whose lives were affected by what had occurred in the war. I mean, certainly there were returning soldiers and so on. But there were also families who lost people in the Holocaust. And so Holocaust stories were always a part of what I knew. It was the backdrop for so many things in our lives. It was there. And you know what? It's never gone away. It's never gone away as the moral extreme, or I should say the immoral extreme, what human beings will do to each other.
And it's interesting because there are so many stories that are also World War II stories that aren't Jewish stories. They're World War II, Germans, Poles, and the suffering and weirdness and fear and terror that people had struck into them in every part of society.
Yeah, well, let us remember that in addition to 6 million Jews, another 5 million non-Jews were killed at that time.
Right. I mean, the number is almost 12 million. And when I hear the number 6 million, I'm like, it's almost twice that number of people who were killed in brutal ways. And I mean, my mother, German, lived through the bombing of Dresden and the horrors that they all experienced, the people who didn't die, but who lived in or next to the city. And things happened like, when she was 15 or 16, an SS officer came to the house basically demanding to marry her because she looked like she was of pure blood, and there were those programs of basically propagating this race. And my grandparents fast-talked the guy out of it, and it was very scary.
Yeah.
But if she hadn't, if they hadn't been quick on their feet, she would have been married off to a brutal stranger.
I mean, let us remember that Lebensborn was an entire program in which German Aryans, SS officers, etc., were all encouraged to impregnate as many Aryan-appearing women as possible, which was not really very happy for conquered countries.
Whether through liaison, marriage, or rape.
Exactly. Exactly. And they also had these great clinic sort of laboratories where these children were raised as a group. So they would have a nurse, perhaps, or just a caretaker, would come in and feed and change all of these babies as groups. So they lost their identities.
They lost their identities, they had no mothers, their mothers didn't want them because they were products of rape, basically rape of the conqueror.
Absolutely. And also, the women who gave birth, despite the fact that they were raped, were then shunned by their countrymen.
And this happened all over Europe?
It happened in the conquered countries. And, I mean, some years ago I saw a documentary of people in Norway who had recently discovered that they were products of this particular program. And despite the fact that they had nothing to do with how they were conceived, They were, in fact, as adults, shunned by those who knew them in Norway. So I cannot but think that Norway was not an exclusive.
Right.
I mean, this kind of thing happened in Poland for sure. It happened in Germany for sure. It happened everywhere the Germans could do this.
And let us not let the irony escape that these people were being shunned because they were the product of...
They were members of the master race.
Because they were members of the master race, but the whole idea was to reject concepts of race. So they were basically rejecting these half-German Norwegians on the basis of their race. That's messed up.
Isn't that spectacularly human?
Spectacularly human, as is this play, The Hat. We're talking to Diana Lewis about the play, and it is part of the new play forum that's happening at the Santa Fe Playhouse.
Yes, this was their maiden effort into producing new plays, because their usual policy is to only produce plays that have been published. In this case, they secured 30, 40 plays and selected four out of that number and did staged readings of those four last November, and then invited the audiences to vote on which play they'd like to see produced. And happily, I would have to say The Hat was chosen. So I really applaud the Playhouse for what they're doing, because it's so nice not to have to die to get a play produced.
You think a lot of them are dead playwrights?
Absolutely, because then nobody interferes. You know, I think most directors prefer dead playwrights.
Or famous playwrights who live in New York.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Of which there's quite a bit. I mean, there's a lot of living playwrights that are being produced. David Lindsay Abaire comes to mind. He's always being produced here.
He's been produced here multiple times. I think the part about current plays that I find difficult is that many of them don't have a story. And I do love a story. And I think that's exactly why I write plays. And I think people hunger for stories from campfires, prehistoric times on.
Yeah, very much so. And this is quite a story. It takes you on a real ride of both historical and personal surprises. Let's just put it that way.
I always think that it is the small story that tells the larger one. When you're dealing with numbers like 11 or 12 million, it's inconceivable. You can't really put that in your mind and have it be real. But if you tell a small story that illustrates the effect on normal human beings, or somewhat normal human beings, it tells a larger story.
There's also an interesting theme of truth-telling in this play. And again, we don't want to give too much of it away, but there is the truth-telling of art and photography, and you have the character of this artist. And then there's the truth-telling of journalism, and you have a character in it who's given up journalism to support art, but he's still a truth-seeker in the journalistic sense, which leads to dot, dot, dot.
It's also, truth and its absence are a constant theme for me, because while I believe heartily in truth, I recognize full well that there are times when the truth is a weapon, and it is something that hurts people more than helps people. So sometimes I think the thing to do is to withhold a truth as an act of kindness. So I explore that theme over and over again. My mother, toward the end of her life, kind of ran away with the notion of telling a nice fib to make everyone happy, to the point where truth was tough for her. And that really made an impression on me. And I think in every play I've ever written, a sub-theme is truth or its absence.
And proposition, the truth will set you free, pro and con.
Yeah. Well, of course, the sign over the camp was, work shall set you free. Truth had nothing to do with what they were doing there.
Now, there is also this interesting theme that I think applies to everybody, no matter what the context, which is the building of narratives about your own life, especially when you don't have complete narrative passed on to you. So the building of the narrative about, well, as we talked about earlier on this program with Hannah Nordhaus, about her grandmother, the American ghost of the Staub Mansion, which is now La Posada Hotel. You want to know who she is. You want to build up the stories. When you are an orphan, this question of who your parents are, did they love me? That question, so many adopted children have that question too. And you make those narratives, and then you live by them. And then when they're challenged, the sense of crumbling of identity can be massive.
Mm. In the case of this woman's story in the play, she created a narrative and shared it with those closest to her to enable her to live through the absence of family. And what is challenged in this play is that narrative that she created for herself. And what kindness is there in supporting it or refuting it? And I suppose we all create a narrative and have only life to live to make it be true or not true.
Well, and I think so many people, when our central narratives are challenged, that's when we become very unhappy and ill at ease.
Yeah, there's no ground to stand on. If everything that you have believed is true of you, or most of it, turns out to be perhaps not true, what have you left?
Right.
And can you start over? And if you do, how?
And there's a lot left unsaid in this play. And we're, you know, it's funny, you and I are talking around the many themes of the play, trying not to give them away, but very much worth seeing. Beautifully written play. Now, you wrote the play. Have you been at all involved in its production? We're talking about the play The Hat by Diana Lewis.
No, in fact, that's not really how it works. It works that once a director has a play, it is up to that director to cast and to work with the cast to make the play come to life. In this case, the director is Christina Duarte, who is the artistic director of the Santa Fe Playhouse. And she has selected the cast, two of whom were in the staged reading, and another two who are not. And so it's been her job to bring them together to tell this story. And they've all been working really very hard.
So when you are there on the opening night, you'll be seeing it for the first time.
I will see it for the first time on opening night. And that is on Thursday, the 12th of March. And on Friday night, there's a gala that starts at about 6 o'clock, and there will be Polish food on offer.
Pierogi?
Yes. In fact, there will be pierogies.
Ladies and gentlemen, definitely check that out on Friday the 13th at 6 in the evening. And meanwhile, the play runs for 2 weekends, and it's starring Barbara Hatch, Elias Gallegos, Jerry Maher, and Danette Sills. 8 performances, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 in the evening, Sunday at 2 in the afternoon, and once again, the gala on Friday night, the 13th, at 6. For more information and reservations, you can call 505-988-4262. You can also go online to santafeplayhouse.org. Diana Lewis, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.